الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر الله
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and peace be upon you all. Welcome to this new episode of Islam in Focus. I am your host, Muhammad Hussein Hosni, and this will be the second of our series of episodes on Islamic teachings and the Islamic precepts. Today's episode will deal with God, capital G, in Islam, His attributes, His essence, and so on. Our guest today on the program is Dr. Jamal Badawi. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Jamal, and welcome to the program. I was wondering, maybe to start with, if you could summarize for us the basic ideas that were involved in the first episode of this program that may bear importance or bear on the ideas that will be propagated today.
Sure. I would say that there are five basic points that I think should be remembered again. I'd just say them very briefly. First, we tried to clarify last time that to connect Muslims with Arabs is a mistake. Not every Muslim is an Arab, and not every Arab is a Muslim, or to tie it even with the Middle East at large, because the Muslim population is close to 1 billion in all kind of countries and all places in the world, and the Arabs are actually a small minority among the Muslims. The second main point was that the whole notion of religion, as understood by the Muslim, is that it is not just a matter that's restricted to the basic rituals or religious observances, but rather an all-encompassing concept, a way of life that includes the social, economic, as well as the political aspects of life. Life is all integrated. That was the second. The third main point that was discussed is the meaning of the term Islam itself, which we said that Islam is an attributive title, that is, it is not just a name that is derived from a person or place or locality, but a name that carries within itself the meaning of Islam. And we said that the word Islam means in Arabic to achieve inner peace and peace from without, peace in community and in the world at large, by submitting oneself to the will of God and the obedience of His command. Within this kind of basic definition of a Muslim or Islam in a sense of following the path of God, we said that all prophets throughout history, not only Muhammad, did actually preach the same kind of basic Islam, and that it was simply culminated or fulfilled and completed with the advent of Prophet Muhammad. And we concluded from that not only that Muhammadanism is a mistaken and offensive name for Islam, but the fact that all prophets are brothers in that sense, and those who sincerely follow them are also regarded as following the same basic path of Islam. The fourth point we looked into is this, the definition of a Muslim, and we said based on the definition of Islam, we can simply say that a Muslim is one who commits himself or herself to live in accordance with the teachings, commands, and guidance of God as derived from revelation. It's not just a title that somebody claim or pay lip service. A true Muslim is one who follows the path of Islam. The fifth and final point that might have some bearing here is that we said that this universal outlook of Islam towards prophets, towards other followers of other faiths, would provide a very good foundation, a very good beginning to remove or demolish the barriers of fanaticism, prejudice, and stereotypes which are sometimes propagated by mistaken sources which does not present the Islamic faith in its true perspective. And this would provide more, hopefully, cooperation between various people following different prophets who were Muslims to us for the good of all.
Now back to the topic of the day, which is God, capital G, in Islam. The first philosophical issue that is raised in this respect is, how does a man with his limited capability come to know Allah, the concept of gnosis? How do we know Allah? What faculties are used in the knowledge, and what sources are used to reach a full knowledge of Allah in Islam?
Well, to start with, sometimes you don't really have to go too far to get some basic, insightful knowledge and information, not only about God, but also about other things. I'll give you an example of this. When we talk about human nature as the pure, innate human nature, mm-hmm. that is, a human being is created with this natural, pure disposition to realize his creator. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking now about science, I'm not talking about prophets or revelation. Even on the very fundamental level, we find that throughout history, there is a very strange phenomenon, that people of different backgrounds, living in so many different parts of the world, at different points of time, mm-hmm. they have always had this strong urge within themselves to look and to yearn for the Creator. They feel that there is some power, omnipotent, merciful, power provider, transcendent. They try to interpret, of course, maybe sometimes with in a mistaken way, by materializing God in some form or the other, but the basic yearning has always been there, even in the cases where you have places where there's no recorded history of a particular prophet who was raised in, mm-hmm. in this area. That's what I refer to as an innate nature. The mm-hmm. Arabic term, again, is, I'm sorry, not very translatable. It simply says fitra. Fitra literally means something that one is created with, or created mm-hmm. in accordance with. Yeah. Just to give you an example of this, one verse in the Quran or passage says, so set your face steadily and truly to the natural faith. Notice the term here, natural mm-hmm. faith. It's nothing concocted doctrines. Natural faith established by God. God's handiwork according to the pattern he has made mankind. No change in the creation of Allah, or God, capital G. That is the standard religion, but most among mankind understand not. That's why you find the Quran when it tells or relates the story of Prophet Abraham, mm-hmm. when his people deviated from the worship of the one God, and he simply addresses them, and this is a word in the Quran, says, "Afillahi shak," is there any doubt about God? In other words, he's not arguing, he's not trying to provide equations and all kind of massive proof. He said, if you really think about it honestly, is there any doubt about the existence or presence of God, instinctively even, or I'd say innately? The other thing that is quite observable also, it has been shown over and over again that even those who are atheists, those who reject God, at some time or the other, when they're really in difficulty, they remember God. You might have seen, for example, the writings about what happened to people in the Second World War. Somebody who was an atheist or doesn't believe in God, or mm-hmm. or just a person who doesn't believe, period, dropping with a parachute. The parachute doesn't open. And say, oh, my God. Why did you remember God mm-hmm. now? That shows, again, there's something even despite of you. Even many of us in our own human experience, sometimes a person gets sick and he's really suffering or in pain, and says, oh, if I'm just cured, I'll try to be better, I'll be good. But of course, once he gets over that, he forgets it. And that's why the Quran also analyzes this weakness in human nature. For example, in one ayah, one verse, it says basically that when people go on ship and then there's a problem and the ship is about to sink, all of a sudden, they remember and they pray to God to save them. Once they get to shore, forget it. So this is the kind of, indirect proof from our nature as humans that we know God. Finally, I should say also that something else could be very relevant here. I derive that also from the Quran. That the Quran tells us that beyond this basic knowledge of the existence of the Creator, that a person is inspired, in a way, the basic knowledge of right and wrong. Like one passage in the Quran, it says, وَنَفْسٍ وَمَا سَوَّاهَا فَأَلْهَمَهَا فُجُورَهَا وَتَقْوَى, that God has fashioned this soul, and he inspired into it the fundamental knowledge of right and wrong. I know this knowledge, of course, could be perverted because of the influence of personal reasons or other social pressure. So a human being, by his nature, in his purity or her purity, recognize some of these, and this, to me, are quite legitimate sources of information. It's not scientific in a sense that you can put it in a test tube.
Right.
But it's so common, and one cannot really overlook it and say, I close my eye because this doesn't sound like, science.
That's right. I'm glad you raised the point of scientific. Now, does the instinctive way of knowing Allah or reaching gnosis of Allah contradict the intellectual exercise that may be followed?
Right. Because sometimes you hear people talking about, like, intellect is the enemy of faith or a challenge to faith.
Yeah.
Or sometimes people might believe that faith requires that one closes his mind, doesn't think, just accept things so that because he doesn't, he's not capable of fully understanding. Mm-hmm. No, I don't think there's any contradiction. It's not only intellect. I would say even in general, all human faculties, senses, including also as one of the faculties, intellect, are part and parcels of the whole process of seeking the truth. None of this might be by itself sufficient, and perhaps we'll get into that, but on the whole, they are not really in contradiction. In fact, I would say even more positively that from a Muslim point of view, one of the main things that make the human being distinct, one of the basic blessings that he's given by God, to make him different from animals, because animals also can think, but they don't have intellect. Is that question of intellect? So it's a God-given gift or blessing. How could we interpret that as a challenge or contrary or the antithesis of faith? This doesn't really stand. On the other hand, we can say also that the use of intellect and human faculties in general indeed could be in itself a source of knowledge, a source of reinforcing the faith and making sure that the person really is on the right track. You see, even in the areas of beliefs, where most people would say beliefs is not something really that you can apply the normal human reasoning. Yes, human reasoning might be short of it, but it's not useless. Not at all. In fact, the Quran even addresses people who did not use their minds. And in many of the passages in the Quran, the appeal is made for us to utilize our mind if we use it in the right way, again, trying to get into our basic, innate, pure nature, we would be able to discover the truth. So even the matter of belief is not just a kind of dogmatic presentation that this is, you know, how you should look at it, don't think about it, you accept it just by faith. Because intellect also could be a strong foundation for a firmer type of faith. If I may, I'll give you some specific examples so that we don't just talk in generalities. If you check the Quran, for example, at least the way I classify my understanding of this area, that it implores the human being to search for truth, to search for knowledge of God, or about God, I should say, on three basic levels, interrelated levels, by looking into oneself, by looking into the environment in which one is living, and by looking into the total universe, the cosmos, if you will, as a whole. I'll give you examples of each. On the personal or individual level, one doesn't have to go too far to realize that God does exist. You just look into yourself. You don't have to be a scientist. Of course, if you're a scientist, you appreciate more.
Yeah.
You know, how come the whole body is made out of cells? One cell becomes a cell for sight, one becomes for hearing, it's amazing. How does the brain operate? The circulatory system, the digestive system, the nervous system. Such coordination and beauty that shows that these things did not simply come in a haphazard way. They must have been a deliberate design before it. So you want to find about God? Look into yourself. You don't have to go too far. And that's why, to quote the Quran, it says, "Wafi anfusikum afala tubsirun." That is, by looking into yourselves even, you will find evidence that is to the presence and the powers of God. In one verse even it says, didn't they think or reflect, or do they not think or reflect in their own minds? Or in their own selves, look innerward. In fact, like I said, not only looking into the whole body, if one really divorces himself from any prejudice caused by any particular pressure one way or the other, or worship of science as the ultimate thing, if one utilizes science in the proper way, you don't have to look into the whole body. Just start analyzing one single organ and see how it works. Like some scientists would tell you that in order to duplicate the digestive system, you'd have such a huge laboratory, and still it wouldn't operate as efficiently as your stomach. You get acids in your stomach that could even affect metals, erode metals, but it doesn't hurt you. Still, it digests the food, but doesn't hurt you. Can all that be haphazard? If that one aspect of that is regarded as something that developed by chance, would everything else falling in line, pieces put together, also by chance? So the question is really totally unfair to judge it this way. If you want to go beyond yourself to find further evidence, the Quran also implores people to consider and to think. Take one aspect that many people think about today as very fashionable, like the ecological balance, for example. Many people would take that as a very clear evidence, again, that there is a design in this universe. Vegetation, as it relates to animal life, to human life, the atmospheric coverage or layer that we have, everything is put together to sustain the human life. Now, this, like I say, looks fashionable, but if you really look into the Quran, you find that there's mention to that also. There's some hint into that. In one verse in the Quran, it says, وَخَلَقَ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ فَقَدَّرَهُ تَقْدِيرًا, that God created everything in exact proportion. This is a very important term, in exact proportion. It's not just that he created, that there is a deliberate design of putting all of these things together. One verse in the Quran, for example, translation of meaning, it says, glory to God who created everything in pairs, or created in pairs all things that is on earth, or that the earth produces, as well as their own mankind and other things which they have no knowledge of. In another verse in the Quran also, when it appeals to people to look into the whole scheme of creation, it says, were they created from nothing, or are they creators? Nobody claims that he is created from nothing, nor can he create that he is, claim that he is a creator or the creator. Then the verse continues, or did they create the heavens and earth? Nobody claims that. Then it says, nay, but they see not. So the sight is there, but whether we apply it in the right place, in the proper way or not, that makes a difference. And finally, if you move into the what I call the third circle, not just looking into ourselves or the environment around us, but looking into the whole cosmic order, again, there is design. The solar system, the way everything's coordinated, the distance between the sun and the earth, which if it increases too much, it might burn everything. If it goes too far, everything would freeze. This is a deliberate thing. The succession of day and night, the circulation or changes of seasons, which has very important relevance to the lives of the people, to vegetations, to animal life. All of these beautiful things that we awe in the universe, we look at it with great admiration, definitely shows that there is a design behind it. There is a designer also, or creator behind it. Like one verse in the Quran implore us in particular in this area, and it says, have they not reflected on the domain of heavens and earth and what Allah created therein? In another verse it says also, again, just the translation of meaning, lo, in the creation of heavens and earth and in the succession of day and night, there are certainly signs for those who reflect, those who remember God standing, sitting, and reclining, and ponder or reflect on the creation of heavens and earth, saying, our Lord, you have not created this in vain. Glory be to you, so save us from the hellfire. So the Quran is replete. These are only examples of how, right, even like I said earlier, in the area of beliefs, which most people take as dogmas, the utilization of human senses, the Quran uses, didn't they see, didn't they hear, didn't they think, didn't they reflect? All of these are integrated and regarded as a valuable source of knowledge, even about beliefs, provided, again, it's used in the proper framework.
Now, is there any contradiction, again, between the concept of using one's own intellect to arrive at a pure and correct knowledge of truth and the essence of Allah, and the way which you are all familiar with, which is that of revelation? In other terms, is revelation commensurate with that path, or is it contradictory to it?
Yeah, I, from the Muslim point of view, definitely it's commensurate. There is no problem whatsoever with this. Because Even though we said that the human innate nature, the pure nature, is a source of information, or pondering in the universe is a source of knowledge, it's useful, but it's not perfect. Mm-hmm. The fact that it's not perfect, again, does not make it useless. I mean,
that's right.
The other way around. There are a number of reasons for that, that makes us in need as humans for additional guidance through direct revelation. Mm-hmm. We talked, for example, about the pure human natural disposition, mm-hmm. or fitra, as they called it. Now, this human feelings or natural disposition could also be, like I said, perverted under pressures, under indoctrination in one side or the other, which might make it not really operating in the proper direction. That's why you find many people following so many cults. They say, oh, that's great, I found a way. Why did you find? I feel good. Okay, feeling good is one criteria, but it's not the whole criteria. One could be feeling very good also, but for the wrong reason or in the wrong path. So there's still some shortcoming in this. And talking about the senses, intellect, or knowledge, I think anyone, even a person who does not believe in God, would admit readily that our senses are limited. Our perception is limited. Our sight, hearing, we know that. Also, we know that our perception could also be deceived, or could deceive us. If you put a pen in a glass of water, you see it crooked, or at least cut or broken, because the light refraction as a principle. Mm-hmm. When you're the very well-known phenomena of people traveling in the desert, or at least even in hot areas, that you see in front of you as if there is a lake or puddle of water, the mirage, but actually it does not exist. Mm-hmm. But at the time we see it, it's a reality to us. So our perception is very useful. However, it still falls short of getting to know everything. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, science would be okay. It's fine. Science can resolve many issues and problems that are purely scientific, that are purely technical. Mm-hmm. Science can tell me for sure how to use technology, for example, to communicate sound and picture. Mm-hmm. And this can be determined fully by science. Yeah. However, there are many aspects in the lives of people beyond science also. Mm-hmm. There is the moral aspects, there is the ethical standards, there is the application of the fundamental principle of good and bad that we said it's instinctive, but still it needs some modification, needs some implementation. Mm-hmm. And we know from history that people have always had differences as to what exactly defines the proper ethical or moral standards. In order to resolve that problem, there must be a higher authority, mm-hmm. God himself, mm-hmm. telling us and providing us with stable standards of ethics or morality, within which mm-hmm. we can interpret various details. And finally, and perhaps this is, in my mind, the most important reason, is that we know that knowledge is not only limited to science or books or perception. And we know that there are certain aspects of knowledge, legitimate knowledge, which does not lend itself to any of those tools. Examples, take the knowledge of the unseen. What happened in the past before history was recorded? If you wanted to get any information on that, there is no recorded history. Or at least there's dispute about recorded history. Sure. Revelation can tell you what, for example, the stories of previous prophets, what they said, what mm-hmm. was their message. There are issues that no matter how much you use your mind, you're not able to arrive at a final conclusion. Example of that would be, let's say, knowledge about God. You can feel the presence of God, you can feel some of the attributes of God, but you can't have full knowledge without having a prophet or messenger receiving that revelation from God and communicating to us. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, then, I don't see contradiction. Actually, they mm-hmm. all supplement each other. They have to be used simply in the proper context.
Framework, yeah.
Or framework.
Now, back to God, capital G in Islam. Do the Muslims in general have a special term or a special name for God, or do they just use the word God?
No. Mm-hmm. You see, the proper terminology used in Islam for God is Allah. A-L-L-H-A-H, Allah.
Is there a reason for having a special word?
Yes, there is a number of reasons, in fact. First of all, the term Allah in Arabic means the one and only universal God or creator, provider of the universe. Mm-hmm. Notice here, I am emphasizing the one and only. So a Muslim would not simply say there is one God. That it would not be as accurate or as strong expression as saying mm-hmm. the one and only God. Mm-hmm. And the meaning, the main point to be emphasized here is that Unfortunately, again, many of the writing that you find in various libraries in the West, in various places, which are not written from Muslim standpoint or how Muslims understand Islam, they depict Allah as if it's something like of a tribal Arabian god or even the god of Muslims. For example, they say Muhammad worshipped his Allah or worshipped Allah. Mm-hmm. Muslim worshipped or worship Allah. Even if they say Allah also means God, they put it in such a way that leaves the reader or audience with the impression that maybe it's not exactly the same thing for a Christian or Jew, for example. Yeah. Is it really the same kind of thing that he's talking about? But the reason, like I said earlier, for considering the term Allah as more accurate, first is that Allah is not only just a meaning of God, a meaning, it's also a personal name mm-hmm. of Allah. It's both reference to God and his personal name. And this is beautiful in a sense. Because when you say God, you can as well say Lord. Mm-hmm. But when you say Allah, you're invoking the name, the personal name of
person
God.
In other
exact, personal, and it established some kind of personal touch.
Rapport.
Or rapport between the human being and the mm-hmm. the creator. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I consider also relevant is that the term Allah in Arabic mm-hmm. is not subject to plurality. Mm-hmm. For example, in English you could have God, and you could also have gods, plural.
Right.
In Arabic, there's nothing that's equivalent to gods, none whatsoever. In other words, there is no Allahs, for example.
That's right.
And that emphasizes the purity of Islamic monotheism. Mm-hmm. A third reason I think would be quite interesting also. Mm-hmm. Interesting enough, the term Allah doesn't lend itself to any gender. In other words, there is no female or male gender for the term Allah. For example, in English, you could have God and goddess. Or goddesses.
Yeah.
In Arabic, this doesn't exist, simply. Which shows that that term is a lot more accurate, really, than using the term God. Even if you use capital G, it's at least relatively more accurate in conveying the true nature of supreme,
the supreme
creator.
Being.
Yeah. So this, taking together, then, would actually make me ask myself, even why am I using the term God, or why did I use it even in previous yeah. programs? But I would say that at least for the purpose of communication, especially in the initial part of the programs, perhaps I had to use that term. But having explained why the term
should be familiar,
exactly, should be familiar. So maybe from now on, I'll try to use at least both, if not the term Allah, which is more accurate,
yeah.
the one and only God.
Dr. Badawi, we've only got 1 minute left in the program. We thank you very much again for elucidating some of the basic concepts regarding the Godhead in Islam. We hope that next time we'll pursue that idea, because we still have several topics and several questions to ask on that score. And we hope that you'll join us next time. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us today. And we hope that you will be with us next week on the following episode, where we'll be treating the continuing topic of the Godhood in Islam, as well as a preamble to the precept of monotheism. Thank you very much, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Allah.